The content presented in this radio show, hosted by the Attorneys of Legacy Legal Planning, LLC, is intended for educational purposes only. It does not constitute legal advice, and listeners are strongly advised not to rely on the information provided for specific legal decisions. Legacy Legal Planning, LLC, and its attorneys are not responsible for any actions taken based on the content of this show. For personalized legal advice, listeners are encouraged to consult with a duly licensed attorney in their respective state.
WMEX Quincy, Boston. Streaming at WMEXBoston.com. And on your smart speaker, just say play WMEX.
The greatest hits of all time are back. This is the all-new WMEX.
WMEX Boston.
Legacy Legal Live, hosted by Kendra O'Toole, Michelle Reed, and Elizabeth Caruso of Legacy Legal Planning, is a show about discussing your estate plans, options, and answering your questions. Call in at 781-834-9639 and start your lifelong partnership covered by benefits that you've earned through proper legacy planning. Now here's your hosts, Kendra, Michelle, and Elizabeth.
Good evening. Thank you for joining us tonight on Legacy Legal Live. I'm Kendra O'Toole.
I'm Michelle Reed.
And I am Liz Caruso.
And we are the attorneys from Legacy Legal Planning in Norwell. And we service clients in estate planning and elder law. And the last few weeks, we have been talking about our weekly journal prompt that we are giving to help you create your legacy story. So Michelle, this is something that we've been doing to allow you to create something for your loved ones, whether you put it in a journal, type it in a notes in your phone, something for your loved ones to be able to read and learn a little bit more about you and remember you and your legacy. Michelle, will you?
Yes, absolutely. So as Kendra mentioned, we've been doing this weekly. You can follow along with us here on WMEX if you want to replay some of the previous shows, learn a little bit of estate planning, and listen back on our last 6 weeks of journal prompts. This week, please tell us right about a place that you have traveled. So if you've got a fun story, a meaningful story, a once-in-a-lifetime trip story, share that in your journal and preserve that for your loved ones. Now, I know both of you, one of you has a cool travel story because I'm a homebody, so.
So my traveling, I did a lot of my traveling in college and I still try to travel as much as I can because it is one of my favorite things to do. But when I was in college, I had the opportunity for 3 weeks to go to 6 countries and it counted for credits for class and everything. And we went all around Europe and it was just an amazing trip to be able to I was already a legal studies major then, and so we went to some of their courts and learned about their legal system and everything while I was over there for the 3 weeks, and it was just really interesting to be able to do that and the opportunity to go to 6 countries in 3 weeks, and it was just absolutely amazing.
On a college student's dime.
And I also studied abroad in Spain for 3 months as well, and just both times were so wonderful. I absolutely loved it and can't wait to go back.
Okay, that's really cool. Like, I remember I went to Europe as an adult, and every single time I saw a court, I'm like, ooh, take a picture of me with a court. It's a court.
I have lots of those from that trip.
Get me a white wig.
That's right.
And Liz, you travel quite often that most people probably know on here.
Yeah, well, if I'm not on the radio, I'm in Disney. I'm the Disney file. Although I would also say, like, for a legacy prompt like this, if for somebody, trying to learn about my legacy, my guess is that they would already know about Disney. So I would unlikely write in a journal about that. So I'd also probably write about my trips to Europe. My husband and I went to London and Paris probably 10 years ago now. And it is one of the greatest trips I've ever taken. London is, I tell everybody, it's like my favorite place on earth other than Disney World.
So we hope this brings back some memories that you have of your traveling and leave that legacy for your loved ones. And maybe they'll then take that trip as well to be able to really experience it. So as Ben had mentioned, please feel free to call in tonight with questions to 781 834-9639. We would love to answer any questions regarding estate planning. And we want to put out a shout out there to let you know and put in your calendar a save the date for the senior celebration. We talked about this last week as well, and we will continue going forward until then. It is on May 8th, and it is from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Holiday Inn in Dedham. And it's a great opportunity for you to meet some different services that may be good for you if you're a senior, or maybe if you're a caregiver taking care of a parent that may need some home health aid or adult daycare or assisted living or financial advisor. And it's downsizing.
We have so many different people coming to, you know, advertise what it is that they can do for the senior population. You know, we have various government organizations who are going to be there. As Kendra said, there'll be financial advisors, there'll be downsizers. I know there's a junk removal company coming. Like, just so many different you know, people that you can talk to that would have a different touch into the lives of caregivers and seniors in our community.
So we would love to have you join us. Again, May 8th, 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Holiday Inn in Dedham. It's right off the highway, so easy to get to. So this week, we're going to be exploring the different asset distribution methods in estate planning.
Yeah, so when we sit down and talk with clients about their estate plan, you know, we obviously talk about who is going to be in charge of making decisions for them when they talk about healthcare proxies and power of attorneys, and those are very important decisions. And, you know, it's usually in the one of the last questions that I get to when I talk with clients, and I'm like, well, who's going to get all your stuff? You know, how do you want your assets to be divided? And sometimes it's a very obvious answer. If they have a spouse, they want everything to go to the spouse. If they have children together, they say, you know, if one of us predeceases the other, we want everything to go to our kids. And sometimes the answers aren't so obvious. So there's, you know, a mixture and a myriad of different answers that I get from clients depending upon what their life situations are. But we're really talking tonight about how we write it into the documents and, you know, what the options are, not necessarily as far as like, you know, who it's going to, but how you get it to them, is really what we're going to talk about. And the most traditional is a straight out just distribution. That can be from a will, which would have to go through the probate court, and the person would have to get their distribution either from the personal representative via a check, or like an actual tangible piece of property would be given to them physically, or you're getting a distribution from a trust. You are a named beneficiary who gets some dollar amount, some percentage, something from the trust is named to go to you. And there are no strings attached to it. You just get it, and that's that.
So when we're talking to clients and sort of qualifying whether this is an appropriate distribution method, we've usually, as Liz said, we've been talking to you for quite a while. So we're sort of pulling out whether there's potential things that we're spotting that might not make an outright distribution an ideal method for a client. But in this case, we're usually saying, okay, do you have any concerns? What's the financial picture of this beneficiary? So we're kind of looking at these pre-qualifiers, because I think most clients come in and say, well, I want it simple, everything outright, just equal to my beneficiaries, and that's it. But then the more that we pull out the information in the discussion, sometimes we find certain things that, you know, maybe you as the client weren't necessarily thinking of, you know, consciously or subconsciously, that might lead to another method that we'll talk about further down the road here. But that's one of the things that we also, when we bug you with some of these questionnaires and we bug you to tell us about your family dynamic, it's not because we're nosy. It's because sometimes, you know, we're looking at it from a different outlook and a different point of view to make sure that we can say, yep, outright sounds great.
And this outright distribution does happen. You know, there's times of taxes and things that need to be done, but your trust isn't carrying on for years on end. It is something that hopefully it is being tied up. And
you have like triggered the rule against perpetuities in my life.
There are certain trusts that you can set up that will go on for a very long time. But when it is outright, you're pretty much, you know, dealing with some final taxes and debts and whatnot. But then really everything remaining gets distributed and the trust essentially terminates, or the estate, if it's by will, then gets closed out with the court.
Yeah, with a trust, best case scenario, you're looking at probably slightly less than a year. That's best case scenario, especially with taxes involved and things like that. You usually have to go through a full tax cycle before you know that everything's free and clear. But usually within a year or two after the person has passed away, with an outright distribution, everything is pretty much wrapped up.
And we talk about pros and cons for this method too. You know, so obviously there's always two sides to every type of every estate planning decision you can make. There's always the weighing of, well, if you want this, then let's consider that. And that's part of the analysis. So the pros is what I mentioned earlier. Everything is relatively simplistic. If nothing goes awry, and it can be pretty simplistic. As Liz said, if nothing comes up, beneficiaries usually receive things relatively quickly, and I use that term very loosely. Some of the cons are, you know, we talk to clients quite a bit about saying, well, listen, with an outright distribution, once the assets are transferred into the beneficiary's hands, it's in their hands. That can be a pro or a con, depending on really what you're thinking of in terms of their dynamic. So it's in their hands, and they can do with it as they please. They can blow it all. they can put it potentially in some sort of investment strategy that you wouldn't agree with, you wouldn't want. So in that regard, kind of asking yourself, is an outright, do I want the simplicity and quickness of it? Or do I really want to make sure that I can kind of have a little bit of control after the fact? So those are the things that you want to think about when you're thinking about if outright distributions is appropriate for you and your beneficiaries.
Control after the fact, pull out that dead hand, as we learned in law school.
Coming stuff. From the grave.
We're going to pull Blackacre somehow into an example later.
All our law school terms just flooding back in.
Well, and there's a lot of times where I see clients who want to do a mixture of different distribution ideas where they don't necessarily want to control everything from the grave, but they want to keep like a pinky finger out to be able to still have some control. And a lot of times I see kind of like a staggered distribution for these types of clients who are like, you know, this is a big chunk of money. I'm not sure I trust my kids or whomever with this much money all at once. So I'm going to split it up. I'm going to say that they get, you know, a third when they turn X amount of years. Fun ones are like a third at 25, a third at 30, and the rest at, 35. Or, put in whatever ages you want. You can get really as creative as you want with this type of the distribution. But you're spreading it out over time so that they're not getting a huge chunk to be able to just blow it all at once. Maybe at 25... they go through it faster than they should have. But by 30, they've maybe learned what a retirement account is and the importance of that. And, that they may cherish that money a little bit more to make it last a little bit longer. Or by 35, they're now thinking about how are we going to pay for our kids to go to college and things like that. So I've also seen it spread out longer than that. I've seen people get distributions into the 50s. I've seen 5% each year. You can do literally whatever you want.
And I think this goes a bit into our protecting beneficiaries from themselves, mm-hmm. in a sense. We can ensure that we're taking some steps to have them have the benefit that they're receiving, but at the same time they are not stuck with having the time that they're able to get the distributions, but they're not blowing through it in that one moment. And this protection and protecting against and for the beneficiaries is beneficial because there are so many different avenues that come up. And I think sometimes when we even see this is, we'll get into this a little later, is more minors, because you may not know how the person is. You know, they're so young, you don't know what they're going to be like at 25, but you pre-plan for that type of stuff. And so protecting from beneficiaries, another one that we often see is if there is a substance abuse issue, there's ways that parents, you know, will want to protect their child and be sure that they're doing what they can to, again, provide for their child, but not provide for that and kind of enable that. They want to be sure that they're helping them in their life, but not quite in that way.
Yeah, I mean, you're making sure that you're not enabling them to make dangerous decisions that they're, you know, were making previously, and not, you know, handing them the ability to make those decisions and make it really easy for them to, you know, make poor choices. You know, it's, if you put a gatekeeper in front of those monies, then the gatekeeper can then, you know, decide if the, you know, person is ready to receive those funds, if they have, you know, proven that they are now clean or making good choices. Or you can have the gatekeeper make payments directly to a third party on behalf of that person, so that the person is still getting the benefit, but they're not having the money directly in their own hands.
I think with this type of trust drafting, we are able to be very specific and very crafty in terms of what it looks like for your family and that dynamic if you have a loved one that struggles with substance abuse. I mean, like Liz said, we can create triggering events, and there's all sorts of powers that we can provide to your trustee or said gatekeeper to make sure that you know, your funds are being utilized in a way that you would want them to be made. Because I think for so many of our clients, it's you know, If I'm not going to be here, I don't want to restrict my loved one, but I also don't want to enable any sort of behavior that I don't find ideal to be able to inherit my assets. So it's a fine line of giving the trustees some significant discretion, but also for you to be putting in your wishes and your guidelines and things of that nature. And that's where we as practitioners, we can help you create that language that makes sense, but is also alluding to your goals and accomplishing them too.
And like you said, some of that language, one of the, you know, I know some terms that we've put in a couple of trusts has been that the hope and guidance to the trustee is that the beneficiary is a part of community in a sense, and working and doing things, and they're not just sitting at home getting a check from the trustee every week or every month. And so saying that we want them to be a contributing member to society and to, you know, yes, that doesn't mean that they have to be out 24/7 and volunteering and this and that, but just that they are putting an effort, maybe working or searching for jobs or maybe volunteering somewhere, whatever the case may be, they are at least contributing to some sort of, you know, good lifestyle and track that they're on. And this is the type of terms that we can put in to help a trustee kind of have a little bit of guidance of, well, I shouldn't just be shoveling out this $3,000 a month for them to sit at home and binge watch TV, you know? And so these terms are the types of terms that we can help to guide that trustee a little bit more and just have a little guidance of what occurs there and what matters.
Yeah, and we've had, I mean, to Liz's point, some of these discretionary items, you know, we've even had language in there that the trust funds can pay for, you know, rehabilitation, things of that nature. So it's not going to the party directly, it's going to an institution on behalf of or something along those lines, but it can be utilized to, you know, to help with sobriety and things of that nature.
Yeah, I have trust that I'm the trustee for, and you know, this person who is a beneficiary has been clean for 6 or 7 years now. And, you know, we have to make sure that he continues to do what he's supposed to do, and he meets with his therapist, and he, you know, we pay for his housing and his HOA fees and car insurance, things like that. But I know that he's out there doing, you know, he's the resident odd job handyman in his community, which is great. And it gives him the ability to, you know, do a little bit of work, get some income on the side, and also, you know, be able to meet people in his community and things like that. So, you know, and, you know, he knows that I'm there. If something happens, he can come to me, and that as long as I know that he's clean and he's doing what he's supposed to do, that I'm going to be there to support him. So, like, if something happens to the car and the you know, there's it breaks, I'm there to buy the part because that's what the trust is for, and he needs his car. Or if, you know, he has to go to the dentist, I'm there to pay his dental bill and things like that. So, you know, that's kind of what down the line the trustee job looks like. And, you know, that's what the distribution over a long time can appear as.
Another distribution method could be trying to shield from creditors or divorce. In regard to divorce, that can be a bit of a tough one here.
It's so hard in Massachusetts because with a divorce in Massachusetts, it depends on how long the marriage has been as to like how a lot of the assets are divided. And if you get into a long-term marriage, like I would say even 10 plus years, 10, 15 years, it's throwing spaghetti against the wall here in Massachusetts to see what fits or what sticks, excuse me.
Who wasted good spaghetti?
The probate court. No. Because it's just about anything goes. A lot of states have very clear rules as to what comes into play when people get divorced. We do not. Inheritances come into play, ownership of homes and retirement accounts and all sorts of things come into play. And we can write into a trust that, you know, the beneficiary has no rights over the money and that the beneficiary has no discretion over it and they don't have a decision, you know, decision-making power as to when they receive the funds. But that's not going to stop their future ex-spouse from saying, well, they have this pocket of X amount of dollars. I'm going to use a figure to make it like sound real. There's $300,000 coming to this person from this trust, or a pool of $300,000 that they can pull from at a discretionary manner. That's not going to stop the future ex-spouse from saying, okay, well, I should be entitled to half of that. And if I can't get it from the trust, I'm going to go and get it from somewhere else. I'm going to get more of the house. I'm going to get more of the bank account. I'm going to get more of the retirement fund. And I've seen things like that work.
And you would hope that, you know, there could be arguments made that they don't have that discretion. They can't demand it. So it's not even technically accessible to them. But like she said, that is completely, that doesn't matter, really. You can try, have your divorce attorney try to throw that spaghetti against the wall and hope it sticks. But it's really not a guarantee at all. So there's no real straightforward way that we can protect from divorce here in Massachusetts for people. We'll do our best and say this is something you can do and hope that it will stick as a, you know, protection. But we can't guarantee that at all.
Well, but I mean, that is to say, we can 100% guarantee that the ex-spouse will not reach the trust.
Yes.
But we cannot 100% guarantee that the existence of the trust distribution is not taken into account during the divorce proceedings and the distribution of the marital assets. Like, we can't tell you that a judge isn't going to buy the argument that because they were married for 25 years, the ex-spouse is entitled to inheritance from the other side. And yes, it's wrapped up in trust and we can't get it and it can't be touched by a creditor. But that's why it goes to, okay, we're going to take it from another asset that can be touched.
So we try to do our best to, you know, make these things and hope that it won't even be countable. But you just never know. And so, unfortunately, when it comes to the divorce, there's minimal stuff that you can do in that regard to protect from it.
I always love fielding questions from clients who have children who live in other states. And so they're like saying, well, my son lives in California. What happens if he gets divorced? And I go, I have no idea. That is California law.
Sounds like he's in for a bad time.
And I mean, even when it comes to Massachusetts family law, we know enough, but we don't practice it. It's not our, correct, we're not in the court every day doing this. So we know enough to advise our clients of how things can come into play. but not in regard to how things actually fall on the daily, or, you know, so not even, let alone how about my child in California, but even your child here in Massachusetts.
Correct.
You know, this is the what we try to do, but nothing's guaranteed.
So that type of trust planning also, too, we utilize similar language to also make sure that we're sort of, you know, you may hear this term and it's, you know, it's a dated term, but, you know, the bloodline planning and things of that nature. So there are ways that we can, you know, draft the language, because we get a lot of questions like, well, you know, if God forbid I lose, you know, a child, is their spouse automatically entitled to my estate? And I think, you know, there's a lot of sort of muddled information out there that ends up leading people to believe that that's the case. So what happens is, when we die and we leave assets to a loved one and we don't leave it in these types of trusts, where we're not having another person manage the funds, it's going outright to our loved one, and then it's in their name and their name alone. So then by default, if something should happen to them, then their spouse has access to it by way of their own estate planning or lack thereof. So we often will utilize the types of beneficiaries, asset strategies for beneficiaries, where we're leaving it in trust, and then we're taking control of what happens when our loved one, our beneficiary, passes away. So if child A passes away, then what happens to that child A's share? Does it go to a child A's spouse? Because you can plan for that if that's a goal. But if that's not a goal, then you want to set it up for ways of diverting those funds and indicating where they go. Do they go to child A's children? Do they go to your child B or C? So making sure that that type of distribution is clear, if that sort of, you know, colloquial bloodline planning is a goal of yours.
And there are some clients that will, you know, say, oh, I want to leave it to their spouse because I know they'll be fine. But like you said, protecting, having it go the bloodline is a way of, yes, right now they might be fine, but just so you don't have to, if you want to be sure it's in the bloodline,
you
and not have
know.
To come protect, yeah. Right, not have to come update because they did get divorced or whatever. Keep it within your family and keep it that way so that you are ensuring that it's falling the way you want. You have those protections for your family line without needing to update later because you said, oh, I didn't want the hassle of having this trust for my minor grandchildren if it ever came to that. I know their spouse is good. You know, that might not be the best route to go to just ensure that it stays within your bloodline.
And then even like we call it, or I call it, the ultimate distribution in our trust. So this is like everybody has gone on vacation together and there's a plane crash or something like that. Like everybody has now passed away in your bloodline. Even
it's a bad thing to say up when our journal prompt is traveling.
Wah, wah.
Use a different example.
Well, I mean, what other example? No. They're only going to get worse.
We've got some doozies.
Yeah, I mean, what am I supposed to say? The family party and the house burns down or something? That's awful.
You already threw spaghetti at the wall. What
could
make it worse?
I know. This is not going to a good place. No. So this is, everyone has passed away. There's no more bloodline. Even our ultimate distribution says it goes to the bloodline, which is your heirs at law through intestate succession in Massachusetts. So we will continue to find blood relatives who will inherit under this trust, and even if it's not like your immediate relatives.
Yeah.
So you guys will literally just keep looking just because that's what the law says.
I have had to hire genealogists to find people in Ireland before.
And they got a random phone call one day.
Yes, it was
literal long lost great, great, great cousin from so-and-so and such where.
They were super sketched out.
There's a lot of money for you. And they're like, right. And where's the Persian prince looking for the deposit?
Yeah, I had to write a lot of really official letters, and everything in Europe has stamps.
Yeah.
Like you need to have like foil stamps. So I had to go to like the dollar store and get foil that I could use my notary clause, my notary stamp with, to make the documents look more official to these people in Ireland. Yep.
And somebody in Ireland definitely thought that was official.
No,
it really was.
It was all legit. I sent them. I said, here's the court. Here's the information. Like, I am a real lawyer who's trying to give you real money.
But you're right. It is sketchy because I got a letter from someone random, and it definitely was not legit.
She did not fall for it, folks.
But it did say, you know, oh, your relatives so far down the line passed away and you're entitled to over $1 million. I'm like, that sounds awesome, yeah, if it were true.
So a Legacy Legal Live PSA, if you do receive one of these letters, have it looked over, look into it. We look into these things, but most of the time they're scams. But apparently, according to Liz, not always.
I ended up having to hire a solicitor. So they hired a solicitor in Ireland who then contacted me and kind of vetted me out. It was like, yeah, no, she's legit.
Wow.
Sometimes even a little Google search will clear that path of, oh, this is not a real law firm or real attorney.
Right.
Yeah. And so obviously, sadly, in your process, at no point did you ever actually say, this is the deal, da da da. You just need to put down $50 to open a bank account.
You just send me
a
gift card
and your social security number.
No, I didn't ask for anything. I didn't ask for anything. I just wanted to make sure, like, I needed their address and I'm going to send you a check. Like,
way too sketchy. Nope, I'm out.
So now that we've disappointed you, if you have received any of those letters that you are a long lost
double check
heir,
those folks.
This looks like a good time to take our first break of the evening. We will be back with Legacy Legal Live on WMEX.
Zip Print Centers of Randolph is the premier one-stop custom print shop that proudly serves the WMEX family. Posters, postcards, and more, their on-site printing experts are ready to turn your project into a work of art. WMEX uses Zip Print Centers of Randolph exclusively for all of our printing needs, and you can too. Call today at 781-963-2250 or email at info@zipprintcenters.com today. Zip Print Centers, 781-963-2250.
Can you really drink red wine with fish? The wine you choose can make your food taste awesome or awful. Listen to my new show, Wine by Design, with Len on 1510. I'm Len Pursuti, a certified wine educator with over 30 years in the industry, here to be your personal wine consultant. Wine by Design with Len on 1510, Fridays at 6 p.m. on WMEX, or by podcast at WMEXBoston.com, or search Wine by Design on your favorite platform.
We are a staple in the neighborhood. Most of our customers have been coming here since they were children for 75 years. It's been the Fowler House since 1946. And so there's a lot of memories here. And so when people think of Quincy Center, they do think of the Fowler House. We're in our 43rd year here at the Fowler House, and we haven't changed much. We are going to add a few new menu items. We're going to spruce up some of the ones that we already have on the menu. We're going to improve on a few appetizers, adding pulled pork to the menu permanently on the sandwich side, adding Italian sandwich. So it's going to broaden the sandwich offerings. We're also going to add a special burger in the name of someone at WMEX. We're going to roll out a new drink list, adding some winter flavors and then some permanent items such as some new margaritas, bourbon smashes, old fashions, kind of get back to that traditional cocktail menu. Fowler House Cafe, located at 1049 Hancock Street, and online at thefowlerhousecafe.com. We are on Facebook, Instagram, and you can of course hear us on the airwaves at 1510 WMEX.
And we're back. We are Legacy Legal Live. I'm Kendra O'Toole.
I'm Michelle Reed.
And I am Liz Caruso.
And again, we're the attorneys from Legacy Legal Planning in Norwell, and we service clients in estate planning and elder law. Tonight, we want to remind you of our journal prompt that we've been doing every week. For if you're just starting to tune in, this week's journal prompt to create your legacy story was to write a place that you have traveled. And so just if you're, again, tuning in right now, we have been talking about methods of distribution, ways that people can leave things to their loved ones or beneficiaries, whether that's outright, if they want to try to protect their beneficiaries from themselves, or we talked a bit about divorce. And so now we're going to lead into a bit about some special needs planning and supplemental planning for some people that may be on some certain benefits from the government.
Yeah, we started the show talking about the sort of plainest and easiest method of distribution, which is outright. And that's typically when you have the quote unquote, you know, everything looks good, everything looks fine. No one's entitled to benefits. Everyone's fine with their money. No one's a spendthrift. We're not worried about anything. But when we have individuals who might be at some point, either currently or at some point in the future, entitled to state benefits for any number of reasons. There are rules regarding the receipt of those benefits, and you have to maintain eligibility, and the big eligibility factor is financial. And we talked last week a little bit and the week before, some of these thresholds are significantly low. Some folks can only have $2,000 in their name and their name alone, but we love these people and we still want to be able to provide for them as equally as we could for other beneficiaries. So a lot of times we have clients who have multiple children and one might be entitled to benefits in the future for disability or any number of other reasons. So we want to be able to provide for them, but we have to do it in a particular way that we are not really royally messing up their eligibility for benefits in the future. And frankly, when we're not here to rectify any damage that we might have done, because we're leaving it through inheritance. So we often work with clients for things that are, you may have heard the terms supplemental needs or special needs trusts. We do this quite a bit in conjunction with our sort of quote unquote typical estate planning. And we're able to do it in a multitude of ways. Some, we can create an entire separate trust vehicle for that type of beneficiary and make sure that we're leaving particular assets to them in a very particular way. And others, we can do it in the body of a revocable trust and things of that nature. So it's very, very particular to you, your family, your beneficiaries, but you certainly want to make sure that you're leaving these, you were just, you know, distributing these assets in a particular way to them, not outright.
And we want to think about not just what they are on today. They may need other help or other benefits in the future. You know, I had met with a potential client that talked about what benefits that their child was on currently. And then we started talking about, well, what if they need more benefits in the future, and talking about the home. And they said, oh, well, we think he'll just live in the home forever. And I said, well, what if, you know, the money in the trust runs out and then the home needs a new roof, or it's not feasible for him to live there, you know, and he could maybe qualify for some other benefits for housing somewhere and then have the remaining money for other usage. And so it's not just about the situation today either. It's about making sure to be able to cover everything that they could possibly, you know, be on in the future.
Yeah, I've had quite a few clients who, if they were, you know, they're single, they don't have children, they want to be able to provide for their parents. And, you know, I caution them and saying, well, that's wonderful, except what happens if your parents need to go into a nursing home or something like that? And that's another one where we're looking ahead to make sure, okay, that we can achieve what it is that you want to, for as far as distributing your assets to your parents and taking care of them older in life. But we want to make sure it's not going to jeopardize their ability to, you know, go to, you know, get the care that they need in the future and, you know, have that paid for and receive benefits for that. So we can, you know, use that special needs language to make sure that that's all covered.
And we don't know how much you're going to have when you pass away. And so there are times where you might even want to leave a small lump sum to somebody that's on, oh, I want to leave my nephew $10,000. But if they're on benefits, that $10,000 will kick them off the benefits. They'll then have to run through that in a couple of months and then reapply at square one.
Or that nephew then comes to us or another estate planning attorney and says, I'm about to inherit $10,000. Right. I now need a separate special needs trust. That separate special needs trust needs to have payback language because the pay. So I'm going to roll back a little bit. There are two different types of special needs trusts in Massachusetts. There are ones that are first party and ones that are third party. Third party ones are the ones that we've been talking about where you are leaving money to somebody else. A third party is leaving money to a person who receives benefits. First party special needs trusts are when the person who is receiving the benefits is creating the special needs trust. And that is when you need to have some type of repayment language in the trust in order to make sure that the Commonwealth of Massachusetts or the federal government receives their money back that they paid out on behalf of the person receiving the benefits if there's any money left in this trust when that person passes away. So in situation A, where you have a third party special needs trust and the money is held by a separate person and doled out based on the trust language to be able to supplement any benefits that they receive. If that person passes away, the person who created the trust can continue to control who gets the money after the person receiving benefits passes away. So it can go to their kids. It can go to their siblings. It can go to whomever they want. If you just leave the money outright to the person receiving the benefits, they then have to create a trust that says the state gets their money back. And you've now lost control over who can receive this money. So it's very important to have this kind of like foresight for anyone who may possibly need benefits in the future to be able to make sure that if that person passes away, it goes on to your other beneficiaries and doesn't end up being repaid to the Commonwealth or the federal government.
And that first party trust is if they're aware that that's something they can even do.
Correct. They have to know that they can go to an estate planning attorney and do that.
Right. So they may think where I mentioned before that they get kicked off their benefits, been through, and have to reapply. They might think that that's the situation they're in.
Correct. And, you know, we're...
And they're often told that, too.
Yes.
And we then charge to create that trust. You know, we're charging $3,000-$4,000 to create a special needs trust because they're, you know, it's very particular language that needs to be used as far as how they receive their money, how the state gets repaid, and things like that. If the money was taken care of beforehand with a third party special needs trust in a, you know, estate plan that was established by the family member without ever putting it into the hands of the person receiving the benefits, that's money saved that doesn't go to an attorney.
And oftentimes too, we have a lot of folks who don't utilize this foresight because you might be caring for a loved one. And frankly, all of your assets are kind of caring for them. So right now you're not in the mindset of thinking of these future benefits. And so it's something that's very easily put off because certain things are taken care of now and you're sort of in a status quo situation. And they're frankly relying on you, maybe living with you. So the income situation isn't as dire as if you were not here and able to provide that supplemental financial situation as well as the living situation. So these types of, if you have a beneficiary that might require this, it's so important even just to sit down and have an education session or, you know, a consultation and ask all the questions to get you prepared to do this type of planning.
So I think that's one of the biggest takeaways from tonight.
We went down the rabbit hole, but it's so necessary.
But it's a rabbit hole that was needed, and that explanation was really crucial for people to understand. So if you have a loved one that is or might need benefits in the future, it is crucial that you do this pre-planning and meet with an attorney and figure out what route you can do to make that the best scenario for all parties involved. So our next distribution method is minor beneficiaries. We might have touched a little bit on some ways that this sometimes come into play, but, you know, especially if you have minors that you're providing for, you know, I mean, you always do a will with a trust, but skip the will, go right to a trust. Do not pass go without collecting $200 if you do not do that trust. You know, if you don't do a trust when you're providing for minor children, you are just asking for lots of court fees and legal fees and court involvement for years.
Just about every probate horror story I have that isn't people fighting over teacups is minor children inheriting from somebody that has passed away, because minor children can't inherit. They're not legally, they don't have the legal capacity to make those decisions. So therefore, even if you're their parent, like their, you know, their biological parent, their adopted parent, I don't care. You still have to go to the court and get appointed as their conservator to be able to receive things on their behalf. And it's a whole process, and it's just adding extra time and legal fees, as Kendra said, to something that could have very easily been avoided by a trust.
And I did this to you on episode one. We'll do it to you again. So what do you mean? If great-grampy passes away and wants to hand his M1 Garand down to the great-grandkid, we can't do that quickly and easily?
No.
That's a
the quickest attorney answer ever. Seriously.
I can be concise when I have to be.
And the answer was not, it depends.
No.
It was a no.
Is this the first in the legal world?
Yeah. Well said.
Or, let me qualify that. Sure you can. And then I'm going to tell you that you have to put aside this amount of money for legal fees when we have to do it through the courts afterwards.
So yes, just expensively.
Yes.
And believe it or not, we want to save you these fees.
Excellent. I'm asking the hard questions here, so you don't have to, folks, but 781-834-9639, and you can ask your questions as well.
And I joke about this, but, like, seriously, every estate administration issue I have had, like, that isn't actual litigation, has just been going through the probate court process because someone put a 5-year-old on a deed and then the other person passed away and the house needed to be sold. Or someone left a life insurance policy to a 10-year-old. Or a parent passes away and didn't do estate planning and they weren't married to the mother of the children. So therefore the minor children receive all of the estate, yet nobody can receive it for them. And we have to go through a whole court process just to get it done.
And as Kendra mentioned, the court process doesn't end. You know, you think you see the light at the end of the tunnel when you get that court appointment and mom, you know, the person can access the funds, but then it becomes yearly accounting. And if you want to get it out of the court system, you then have to pay an attorney, petition the court to be able to do a trust and then pay an attorney to do said trust. So it becomes this rabbit hole, we'll continue on with that term, of these assets being drained for that type of stuff.
That light is a very dim pinhole that you're trying to get to, but it takes a long time.
You're at the end of the wick and it blows out.
And especially for that scenario where estate planning wasn't done and, like you said, they're not married and it goes to the child. It takes, I've been working on one for 4 years that we've just been trying to get the assets and show the proof. And there was a divorce and not everything was even done and complete with the divorce. So we've had to go through Quadro to split up the retirement account of, you know, one of the spouse. And because his estate was still entitled to half of that, you know, or a percentage of that Quadro of that retirement account. So we still had to go through this Quadro where they actually split it up legally and the court approves it all and it has to be done. It is a
retirement account.
Yes, it is. And so it's been years that we've been trying to do this, and our hearing started like during COVID, and it was brutal to get to the, because the hearings just weren't happening. It was at the time where everything was, oh, we'll just freeze things for a couple of weeks.
And think about it. We're talking about minor children. They're expensive. They have needs. So if that's an understatement.
Cheers to that.
So, you know, whether you're a parent or a grandparent, even this applies, you know, we have so many generous, wonderful, loving, giving, caring grandchildren, grandparents who want to leave to their grandchildren. So making sure that you're setting up these minor children to their mom and dad to not have to go through the probate court, even if they're alive, well, and healthy.
And under the court, if there's no planning or anything, they are no longer considered a minor at 18. So
that's a scary alternative as well. So right? Then we go back to our limited distribution.
You've now right? gone back to go.
So we don't collect 200, or do we? I don't know.
They're collecting a lot more than 200 at 18 years old, which is so scary.
Because that would be $375 an hour they're collecting.
And I mean, to get all that at 18, and then if they're in college, it could affect FAFSA and all that type of stuff. I don't know enough about FAFSA, but
thankfully not anymore.
We're right.
Yeah. But it is something that you need to know. We need to know enough to be dangerous because we know that this can affect that.
Right. And so that's, lot of times we define minors to be somebody over the age of 25. They have to, you know, because you're at least pushing it out of the 18 because you think that's a little too young to get a big lump sum. But under the court, without any planning and whatnot, a minor is the time they turn an adult is 18.
Yeah. And minors also fall into a lot of these categories, too. You know, we're protecting them from themselves. You know, they might have special needs considerations. So, you know, when we're working with minors, they're malleable little things, aren't they?
They eat so much. They are so expensive.
Food, food, food. Every other day with you kids, I'm telling you.
Don't get me started on my produce bill. But, you know, we joke, but it's very true. Lots of times when we're planning for minor children, if we're blocked from access to certain funds, it's very likely that it's very much needed. So we want to make the access as swift as possible, as seamless as possible as you can in the legal realm. And you don't want to have to go through and get a conservatorship for a minor child. Kendra and I both have ones that have been going on for years now.
And so this kind of, now that we've talked about minor children and their distribution and how to hopefully prevent that from going through the probate court, we are going to touch a bit on, you know, creating a holistic estate. I think we've talked about a lot of ways that you can leave your assets, and you don't have to choose one for, you know, to apply to every beneficiary. You might have a beneficiary that you're leaving the assets outright to for their share, but then you might have another beneficiary that you have supplemental needs language in because they're on benefits. You might have another one that's a minor child and you have other language for that. So you don't need to pick one per, you know, trust or per beneficiary. You can mold them and have a holistic plan to provide for all the scenarios that your beneficiaries might fall under.
Yeah, that's a great point. We talk so much. A lot of times people come in and say, well, I have to give it equally, right? How else can I do it? And then we're like, okay, sit down. We're here all day. We have so many options for you. And, you know, we just touched on really just the surface level. But we talk about the difference between like equal versus equitable. And, you know, you can plan differently for each child so that everything's done, you know, in an equitable manner, but they're not receiving things, you know, in exact equal ways. Everyone's got a little, so if you got a hot mess going on in the situation, we can plan for that.
Yeah, I wrote two trusts today. One had a distribution scheme that was it was equal distribution to four children, but three of them received theirs outright, but there was language there that one of the three children has a child, so there's language that if that one predeceased, then their child would be able to receive their benefit, but it would be held in trust until they were 25. The fourth child there has, you know, substance abuse issues, so they are having their benefits held for their life with a trustee. And yeah, that's the distribution on that one. And then the other one is this person has three children, one who lives in California and he doesn't speak to, and he's had really no contact with for the vast majority of his life. So he's leaving her $20,000. His other two children are disabled. One significantly lives in a group home, is nonverbal, very much on the autistic scale. The other is a functioning disabled child, but both of them are on benefits. The functioning disabled child actually drives him to go see the nonverbal child, and he's leaving 20% of his estate to his disabled children with the supplemental needs language. And then he's decided to leave 80% to charity because, you know, none of his children have children. And this is the end of his bloodline. And he's decided that, you know, he's going to give the majority of his money to charity because his children are basically taken care of by their benefits.
And especially being in a group home, depending on the benefits they're receiving, that is sometimes a benefit of itself. And so if you then have somebody inheriting that, taking somebody out of a group home can really be detrimental just because you have the money to maybe pay for care or something. They're not with others. They're not in community. There's so much more detriment to that than just, oh, well, there's this big lump sum so they can just live in this home with this 24/7 caretaker. That is not, you know, for the most part, not going to be good for somebody. And so this holistic approach to ensure that all of the scenarios are taken into account and ensuring that, you know, the children are taken care of and have what they need but now providing for charities and whatnot. This is that holistic approach we're really talking about.
I'm not sure I've ever written a trust that didn't combine at least a couple of these, because you're almost always taking into account, you know, what if somebody passes away and has a minor child in this trust? We need to make sure that, you know, that money is held for the minor until they're a certain age. I mean, that's the bare minimum of, you know, combining these approaches.
And one thing that we should mention, we mention every episode in one way, shape, or form, but most of these types of distribution methods and these trust planning methods will be able to be updated and be able to grow with your family dynamics. So we can start off with young minor children and grow into these wild and crazy young adults and teenagers. We're questioning what's going on. So we might want to kind of pull back the ropes and have a little bit more control then. And as Liz said earlier, then, you know, when now they're in their 30s, there are different priorities, and we've got a good sense of their personality, and so we're able to amend and change your trust, you know, with most of these types of planning tools, as your beneficiaries' lives change as well. So these needs are something to keep in mind for now and in the future.
Some I've seen where we've talked about substance abuse or, you know, sobriety. Somebody that's now been sober for 30 years, they had issues when they were young, so a plan was established for that scenario. But now they've been sober for 30 plus years, and the parents they're good. They can now get their, you know, share outright because we don't have those concerns. They've been on that track for so long. And so it is a really nice thing that you can update these and have it change with you and your loved ones as their life changes. So we are getting towards the end. We want to again do another reminder of our journal prompt for this week.
So we want you to write about a place that you have traveled, and it can be something that's a fun trip, a disaster trip. I recalled I had a terrible road trip, but I'll save that for another show.
So I'll tell a disaster trip of mine.
We're always here for those.
So my passport had gotten stolen at one point, and I had it was when I was studying abroad in Spain, and so I had to get a temporary, and that was a disaster of its own. I'm not even getting into that part of it. But then, of course, I got home, and it was my senior year of college. So spring break, we decide to go away to Jamaica. And
did Kendra make the trip?
Kendra made the trip.
With your temporary passport?
With my temporary passport. And then the day we were leaving, there was a big nor'easter up here. And my passport expired the day we were coming home.
Oh, no.
And all the flights were canceled. we did manage to get on the last flight to Philadelphia. We then had to sleep in the airport and get in line at 5 a.m. to try to get tickets. We ended up flying into Rhode Island to at least get up here. And because my passport was, and I said to the people as we were trying to get tickets, I said, I'll go anywhere. California, Texas.
They let you into Rhode Island without a passport?
Well, I got it to Philadelphia first.
Okay.
But I literally just kept telling the people at the flight attendant, you know, at the ticket counter, the clerks, I don't care where in the U.S. I go, so don't worry about the Northeast. I can stay away from there.
I will walk from there. I will go to Puerto Rico. I will go to St. Thomas.
Right. So I literally just kept telling them, just get me to the U.S. I don't care where it is. So we did end up getting to Philadelphia. But
so Kendra could have been coming live from Jamaica.
Nope, so that's my fun disaster travel story.
But this is the whole purpose. Share these funny, terrible, awful stories and laugh with your family. That's why we're doing these. So we'll have some fun ones along the way. We'll have some gushy and mushy ones along the way. And if you have any recommendations, we've got the rest of the year. So definitely reach out and give us some. But follow us on social media if you are tech savvy. At Legacy Legal Planning on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. We also have our website, legacylegalplanning.com.
Also, a reminder of the senior celebration on May 8th from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m., where you can meet lots of companies and services that help seniors. And also, it'll be coming in the future. We will let you know, but we are working on a website and Facebook and whatnot for that as well. We have been reaching out to different Council on Aging. We're really getting great feedback, and we're excited for this event. So we hope that you put it on your calendar and join us in Dedham at the Holiday Inn for the senior celebration. And thank you for tuning in for tonight's Legacy Legal Live on WMEX Boston.